Okay, September 4th, Friday. Let's get this thing started. Okay, so we got, per usual, some headlines, some market news. Then I'm going to do some stuff on my personal business, kind of update you guys on what I got going on. And last but not least, we got something educational for all of you. All right, so let's go ahead and go with the first headline. So Trump administration announces eviction moratoriums until the end of the year. That'd be December 31st. Now, this applies to individuals earning less than $99,000 a year, which statistically shows that it's 75 to 80% of Americans, which tells me what? It tells me a lot of Class C and Class B apartments may be in trouble, right? We might be seeing a lot of shortages, right, in the commercial mortgage-backed securities market. We might see default rates go up, like I said, especially in that Class B to Class C. And by the way, for those of you guys that don't know what I'm talking about when I say Class B or C, quality of apartments, right, based on the area, tenant quality in terms of how much income they produce. Think of Class A as you know, that apartment complex with, you know, the amenities. They've got the nice gym, you know, they've got the pool, they've got the sauna, they've got, you know, people walking around in cookie carts and passing out cookies. Think about those, right? I mean, the rent probably a little on the higher end, obviously. Class B, a little below that, right? Maybe they have some amenities that are not as nice, you know, maybe they're not as updated. You know, maintenance guy comes 2-3 days after you make a request. And then Class C, you know, think about, you know, best way to describe it, Class C is probably individuals who make maybe around $30,000 to $40,000 a year. You know, it's still a family oriented apartment complex, you know, but things are not as nice. Maybe the carpet needs to be replaced. And then Class D's, you're talking about your ghettos, you know, projects, not as nice, windows get shattered, a lot of pharmaceutical activities, right? I'll leave it at that. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the next one. Home construction is up in small metro suburbs by 10.6%. That's the number from second quarter that just came out. You're looking at year over year. So if you're comparing second quarter of 2019 to second quarter of 2020, home construction, small metro suburbs is up 10.6%. Comparatively speaking, if you're looking at large metro cores, so large metro Chicago, right? But I mean, they're talking about the core, so not talking about the actual city itself, but you're talking about the greater area. Home construction is down 18% year over year, comparing second quarter of 2019 to second quarter of 2020. Now, here are my thoughts, right? Because everyone's saying there's a hot market. Every broker and realtor in town is saying it's a hot single family housing market. I don't think it's going to last that long, just in my opinion. Now, I understand, right, that the number for mortgage forbearances, it's the lowest it's been. And, you know, ever since this pandemic's happened, but it's still relatively long. I mean, it's still relatively high, sorry. And not only that, but, you know, stuff I mentioned last week and the week before that, right? How default, delinquency rates are up, but at the same time, you know, we have foreclosures that are at record lows. It messes with the supply and demand, messes with inventory. And plus there's a lot of things, right? You know, Airbnb, right? There's a lot of things that's artificially boosting the demand for the single family housing market. So I don't think it's going to last as long as people think. I think eventually inventory is going to balance out, potentially even hit a 180 turn. A lot of people are worried about inflation. People are talking inflation ever since the Fed policy last week. They announced that their goal is to have inflation at 2%. People are worried because we're seeing, you know, the Fed print. Well, here's what a lot of people don't understand, right? And it's basic monetary policy. What they're doing is what's known as open market operations. When they want to pump money and liquidity into the market to boost the market, which is what they're doing right now, which is why we're seeing such highs in the Dow market. Although yesterday we saw an 800-point drop, right? As CNN would call a quote-unquote plunge, right? They want to use these words to attract people to doing clickbait. You know, that's a simple open market operation. They purchase notes, right, when they want to pump liquidity back into the market, right? You buy treasuries, bonds, you name it. And then when they want to do the opposite, right, they sell the notes. It's very simple, you know? So, I mean, a lot of people who are worrying about inflation, right? And let's be real, the average American, it's not by accident, is not very educated in how the banking system and how monetary policy actually works. And that's not an accent. I wish they taught the stuff in school. I wish I learned it, right? Especially when I was a junior or senior in high school. I wish I learned about that. And also right up there with taxes. How do I do taxes? But of course, you know, we all know it's not an accent that they don't teach these things in the education system. Okay. So inflation, people are worried. I don't buy it. I don't think people should be worried about inflation. I think they should be worried about leverage. I think they should be worried about debt and credit crises amongst the banking system, because that's when people really feel it, right? If you look back and, you know, 12, 13 years ago, when you're talking about $5 trillion that was erased, right, completely in the form of 401ks, they're talking about life savings, bonds, real estate values. You're talking about a lot of different things, right? When the American public just got wiped out, $5 trillion, the American people paid for it. That really happened because of over-leveraging, right? We saw a bubble. Bubbles happened because of over-leveraging due to artificial pushes. And we're seeing that right now, right? I mean, you're talking about the big three. If you're looking at the supplementary leverage ratio, which required, by the way, by bank regulators at after 08 to be 5% and above in terms of what is the capital, what is the equity that they're able to leverage and are allowed to leverage. Not only are we seeing a time right now where that leverage is artificial, that 5%, the equity and the capital that's being used to over leverage is artificial, but you're talking about a stress test that the Federal Reserve puts on every single year in June. The simulation with that the GDP would contract 8.5% from pre-recession levels. Unemployment would get as high as 10%, which that has already happened. And we're seeing the big three, JP Morgan Chase, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs. They're all at 5 or below 5, with Goldman Sachs at 3.5%, JP at 5.1%. So I don't think we felt the effects of the over-leveraging just yet. I think once we see a kind of a stop to a lot of these stimulus initiatives, right, to keep the market afloat during these times, I think 2021 is going to be a bloodbath. I really do. I think it's going to be crazy. And I think guys like us who are on the sidelines with cash waiting the last 3 years, by the way, which is what I've been doing, waiting for my opportunity, I think we're going to enjoy a very good time. Speaking of which, that's a lot of what I did this week, right? Transitioning to my update in terms of what's going on with my business. I spoke to a lot of investors who are interested in getting in on what we've got going on down south. You know, my partner Kevin and I, we got a tremendous opportunity that not only survives the recession, but actually takes advantage of the recession very, very well. So spoke to a good number of investors that they're wanting in. I'm pretty selective about who I want to work with. You know, typically if I like them, you know, I always tell people, you know, instead of, I don't raise capital, I build new relationships and I build new friendships. And that's just kind of like the way I like doing things. But you know, I have investors who are like, Daniel, take my money and just never talk to me again. I'm okay with that too. Reading two interesting books. One is by a man named Patrick Bet-David. He's got a book called Your Next Five Moves, right? Mastering the Art of Business Strategy. And the other one is Expert Secrets by Russell Brunson. Really enjoying those two books. So maybe after I'm done, I could add in, right, on the First Deal Experience weekly update, which is what you're listening to right now. Maybe I can add in like the cliff notes, what I've learned, what I got out of it. That was interesting. Working on a couple deals. You know, Kevin and I were working on 7 plots of land down south. We're potentially building 160 units of a multifamily. That's going to be really interesting. Okay, so let's go ahead and move on to educational component. So here's what I want to talk about, right? I'm seeing a lot of debate online amongst my circles, amongst my network about what's better, stock equities versus real estate equities. And you know, I gotta say, I don't have too much experience in stocks, right? Listen, I'm gonna be very honest with you. The one thing you're gonna get here in the First Deal Experience is authentic truth. That's what you're gonna get. Whether it's the story of how one individual went from, you know, 0 units to 85 units or 160 units in 2 years or 3 years, whatever it may be, you're gonna get the truth. I don't have a lot of experience in stocks, but my buddy Kevin, who's my main partner in Miati Partners, who's double my age, spent 25 years in the equity space in the stock industry, was one of the top risk assessors in all of Wall Street, will tell you all day long he'll take real estate. And one of the biggest reasons why is tax savings, right? Depreciation. you know, one of the things I love about owning real estate, you know, you take the value of the apartment, not the whole purchase price. You take the value of the building because land is not depreciable. You divide that by 27 and a half, and that's guaranteed depreciation that you're going to get for the next 27 and a half years. And not only that, if you have a CPA that actually knows what he's doing, what he'll do is he'll do what's called cost segregation depreciation, where he'll take furniture, shrubs, anything that you do to have additions on the property, and he's going to write that off. He's gonna deduct that from your taxes the first year, right? Recently, we had that tax change where, you know, these things were on a five-year depreciation cycle. Our president made the move to be able to do that all in 1 year. So awesome stuff. Never more reason, more of a reason to invest in real estate than now. So I like the idea, right? Because you get cash flow. It's predictable. You know, with stocks, I'm not a big fan because, you know, when you're investing in a stock, you're really investing in a company. And let's pick one that's doing really well, right? I know they had a really bad couple of days, but let's pick Tesla, right? At the end of the day, like I love Tesla, right? I love Elon Musk. Right, I'm a big fan, but at the end of the day, I'm not in their boardroom, right? So if I'm investing $500,000 into Tesla, at the end of the day, I'm not in their boardroom. I'm not making the decision, right? The dude could literally go on a podcast and smoke weed and the stock drops 9%. That's 9% less in my net worth, in my stock, and my money because of somebody else's decision. No, thank you. I like the idea of having control. I like the idea of predictability. I don't like the idea of risk. And, you know, look, whether you like it or not, when you're in the stock market, you're rolling the dice, right? I mean, I don't care who you are. And that's words from my buddy, Kevin, who's got way more experience in that space than I do. You're rolling the dice when you're playing stocks, right? Whether you like it or not, whether you want to admit it or not. With real estate, I believe it is, you know, the more you learn, the more you earn. That's where I believe that statement really applies when it comes to investing. All right, guys, if you ever want to reach out, by the way, I know I don't do this often. If you ever want to reach out, I know I don't say this in the YouTube channel, right? Because when you have 100 and something thousand subscribers, you don't want to release personal information. But if you guys want to email me, daniel@thequackbrothers.com, if you want to just say, hey, if you want to offer feedback and suggestions on the podcast on how I could better serve you guys, you know, I'm all yours. But daniel@thequackbrothers.com, D-A-N-I-E-L, thequackbrothers.com. My last name is spelled K-W-A-K, brothers with an S at the end.com. So thank you guys. Appreciate all of you, right? Thanks for listening. And let me know if there's anything I can do to better serve you guys. But until then, I'll see you next week. And it'll be 9/11. So maybe I'll do some type of September 11th tribute, right? Maybe I'll share a story and, you know, my story where I was, right? We all have that story. But until then, guys, I'll see you next week. Have a phenomenal next 7 days. Love you guys. Praying for you. See ya.
Hey everyone, Daniel Kwok here once again. I hope you enjoyed that episode of the First Deal Experience podcast. If you're wanting to do your first ever deal or scale your existing portfolio, I recently wrote a book to show you how I went from 0 to 75 rental units in just 1 year. Just head over to 0to75units.com for your copy. Again, that's 0to75units.com.